Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. It is also primary election day in Wisconsin, which is good for a number of reasons. Number one, we could have some very interesting results tonight that could shape the race going forward. Secondly, there's not another one of these for another 2 weeks, so we can actually get on with our lives. It's kind of nice to space these out a little bit as we go along here, Jim, although some eventual clarity would be nice too.
Yeah, I guess you could say pick one or the other. You know, we can either get clarity or we can get breaks, but we can't get both. And at this point, if, as people suspect, it's going to go to the convention, we're not going to get clarity until Cleveland. So
yeah. Cleveland's always great for clarity. Okay, let's move on to the good martini now. And Jim, it's been very interesting to watch Fox News during this election cycle. Depending on the personality, you can get a very different idea of who that person and who different people at the network want. Some are very openly Trump. You've got Jeanine Pirro and Andrea Tantaro. Some would say Sean Hannity and Greta Van Susteren, which we'll talk about in a moment. Others certainly lean more in the establishment lane. And then there are some others that are a little friendlier towards the likes of Cruz and so forth. But Greg Gutfeld, who, of course, hosted Red Eye for years, he's now on The Five and has his own weekend show called The Greg Gutfeld Show, not mincing any words on Twitter on Sunday night. This is from Mediaite. Following Donald Trump's Sunday night town hall, Fox News' Greg Gutfeld not so subtly criticized its host Greta Van Susteren and another colleague, Sean Hannity, for giving interviews he didn't think were sufficiently tough. Tweet number one. Whew, another rough one for Trump. How does he put up with this stuff? Next one. According to my score, Donald Trump won tonight's debate by an overwhelming margin. I scored it 1,012-0. Next tweet. I've been informed tonight wasn't an actual debate, but nonetheless, the other candidates clearly were too scared to show up. And finally, quote, and get this, tomorrow Trump's going to be on Hannity, so you know Donald will be facing the fight of his life, thoughts and prayers, unquote. Jim, I don't think anyone's accused Sean Hannity of being overly tough on Trump. Probably the same for Greta and some of the other hosts there. You got to love the fact that Fox News is okay with its people throwing out jabs like this. And at the same time, he's also obviously right.
Do you know what would be a fascinating discussion, Greg?
What's that?
I want you to picture some night on Special Report. Bret Baier steps away. We'll bring back Brit Hume. And on one side you see Sean Hannity and Greta Van Susteren. And on the other side, you see Megyn Kelly and Gutfeld. And Brit Hume in his typically dry, understated. So, friends, what do you think of Trump? And then he just ducks under the desk. Just let everybody go at it. And I'm sure people would say, well, Megyn Kelly is an anchor, so is Greta Van Susteren. And Hannity is kind of in this hybrid role. And Gutfeld is kind of this comedic voice. But actually, I think it'd all be kind of fascinating in perspective. And I think it's interesting to see these things bubbling up to the forefront. As someone observed, if you look at Fox News New York, most of their personalities are lining up behind Donald Trump or are friendly to him. Hannity, Geraldo, O'Reilly, certainly, when they can get both egos into the same room, seems to have a rather admirable approach to him. And for what it's worth, Greta Van Susteren sometimes tapes a show from New York, sometimes tapes a show from D.C. Fox News D.C. seems to be a lot more skeptical of it. Steve Hayes, Jonah Goldberg, my colleague, kind of the crowd there. Now, there are some exceptions to this. Megyn Kelly tapes her show up from New York, so you can kind of see how this shakes out. But there definitely seems to be, you know, the gals on Outnumbered. If you're in New York, maybe you're just used to seeing Donald Trump around more. He is on your wavelength. He is kind of your style. And if you are Fox News DC, you cover Congress, you cover Washington, you cover policy. And Trump's lack of familiarity with some of these things unnerves you and strikes you as unpresidential and unprepared for the job. So I guess you could say kind of good for Fox News for being open about this and for being clear that they don't speak with one unified voice, that there's a strong disagreement there. It might even be better if they could just be even more open about it and let everybody clear about their perspective. But leave it to Gutfeld to express it in a, you know, typically perfectly humorous way to illustrate the phenomenon I think most of us have noticed who are watching these town halls. And I'm making air quotes as I say that, because I think there was one the other day where he talked for 60 minutes before anybody in the audience asked a question.
No, it's amazing. And it's interesting how they seem to come at it from different angles, because it looks like Pyrrho is just personal friends with him probably, and maybe the same a little bit for Greta, because he was on her show long before he ever decided to run for president. I think Hannity is just for the outsiders in general, and Trump's the leading outsider at the moment, so he's sympathetic to him on that front. So it's just fascinating to watch this all kind of bubble together. Whoever thought Hannity and Geraldo would basically end up on the same side in this campaign. But anyway, speaking of Republicans in Washington, as you well know, Jim, because you wrote about it today in the Morning Jolt, there's growing buzz that House Speaker Paul Ryan is trying to tamp down, as is the RNC chairman Reince Priebus, that a lot of Republican operatives and a lot of Republican donors, including Charles Koch, looking to see if Paul Ryan could be the white knight at the convention. If nobody's got the 1237, then maybe some wheeling and dealing can be done. You also have a piece from Mike Allen at Politico suggesting Hillary Clinton's campaign would be very worried about a Paul Ryan campaign, since he wasn't going through the primaries and didn't get bruised in that way, and he's got a fairly appealing story. So good for Paul Ryan to keep trying to point out here that I decided not to run. I don't want to be the nominee this year. I'm not going to be the nominee this year. And yet, even as there are still three Republican candidates out there, the party just keeps telling voters over and over again, yeah, we might just do something different here.
On the one hand, it is possible for this to naturally bubble up. You go to Cleveland, nobody wins on the first vote. Nobody wins on the second vote. You keep going through these things. It's at some point it will become clear that, you know, that Donald Trump couldn't get 1,237. Ted Cruz couldn't get 1,237. Rubio, Kasich, you go down the line, and each one of these guys, none of them can unite the party. So you have to look outside the field of people who ran for president as the option here. The problem is that, you know, every one of the candidates who did run, and the supporters of the candidates who did run, besides the argument that, oh, we cheated out of the nominee, we won a fair and square, you'll hear that from the Trump folks, you might hear this from the Cruz folks, like, the compromise candidate doesn't make anybody happy, and the most passionate supporters of each one of these candidates is going to say, hey, I got ripped out of it. Even if you didn't, you know, supporters of Ben Carson can say, look, I ran. Right, I went out there, I competed, I didn't do as well as I hoped, but then all of a sudden, you know, you just say, eh, never mind, none of this counts, let's hand it to Joe Schmo over here, not to make fun of Paul Ryan. There's a lot to like about Paul Ryan, but I think there's one other wrinkle to this that really is unnerving me, Greg, and that is that, you know, the passion with which Ryan insists, I'm not running for the job, I don't want the job, I'm not competing for the job, our nominee should be somebody who's running. Period. End of story. This is a Sherman-esque denial. This is about as emphatic as you can get. And Reince Priebus is saying, look, our candidate is someone who's running, okay? It's pretty obvious. And Priebus is saying, look, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Greg, if it happens, and Ryan and Priebus have spent all this time insisting it's not going to happen, everyone will distrust them with very good reason. And particularly over – this is a fairly big deal. Say, who are we going to nominate? Well, it's totally, totally not going to be Paul Ryan. And fast forward a few months, and it turns out to be Paul Ryan. People will feel like the whole thing is rigged, that this is all done by dirty backroom deals and all that stuff. And a lot of times it'll be hyperbolic. So I think that you know, Ryan and Priebus should, you know, I don't want to tell them to be quiet about it, because you got asked about it, you got to answer the question. But if you're this stunningly emphatic, you cannot turn around and accept it a few months from now. So if you deny something, you say you're not interested, you should be genuinely not interested and not accept the job. And my suspicion is that, you know, a bit like we've been through this before with Paul Ryan and the speaker vote, you know, he'll insist he doesn't want it, he wasn't competing, but, well, he had it thrust upon him and everybody was begging him to do it, so he's got no choice. And I think that would kind of put a taint on what otherwise would be a very strong potential Republican presidential candidate. But I think there's a very basic principle at stake here. If you want the job, you should campaign for it. You shouldn't wait for somebody to hand it to you out of frustration with all the other options.
Yeah, I can imagine the explanation if it got to a third, fourth, fifth, sixth ballot, whatever it is, and it's obvious that none of the other candidates are going to get it, they could just throw up their hands and say, oh, well, we just assume that one of these candidates who are actually running would get it, but when they didn't, what are we going to do? We had to do this. But ultimately, I don't think that would work either, because even though the Trump and Cruz people will be basically trying to strangle each other on the floor, the one thing they can agree on is they don't want somebody who didn't run and someone they consider an establishment person at this point to be the nominee. So that might be somebody's solution, but I think it could only make things uglier in some scenarios.
I pretty much agree. It would be one of those rare cases where you'd see the Trump people violently storming out of Cleveland and maybe even getting violent. You might see the Ted Cruz people being really angry and chanting. And then when you start seeing – when you see the Kasich people start, you know, tipping over, they would not throw over chairs or tables. They must like knock over a paper cup or something. Very polite, quiet. The Rubio people would just, you know, they would smile as they did it. They would protest and be violent in a cheery, optimistic way. But yeah, it would be a good formula for making everybody kind of dissatisfied. I mean, that's the point where you're like, are we absolutely, totally sure that a Cruz-Rubio unity ticket is completely unacceptable to everybody? But, you know, we don't run the party, Greg.
No, we don't. But the party does have rules that say you need 1,237 delegates to clinch the nomination. But, Jim, that is just totally unfair. Totally unfair, according to Donald Trump, who is obviously doing some math and realizes that depending how the next several states go, he may or may not be on track to get to 1237. He did an interview, I believe, at a diner in Wisconsin, and here's what he had to say about the state of the delegate hunt as well as John Kasich's existence in this race.
It's very unfair, the 1237. The reason it's very unfair, and I think I'll get there. But the reason it's very unfair is the following. When I started, there were 17 candidates. You know, people never say this. I've never even heard it said. Those early states, nobody says it, and it's very unfair. But on a lot of those early, there were so many candidates that if you got 30% or 25%, you'd win, and it would be an unbelievable victory. Honestly, Kasich should not be allowed to run. And I'll go opposite on you. He hurts Trump much more than he hurts Cruz.
Jim, I'm pretty sure we noticed there were quite a few candidates in those early states, but here's the delegate count right now. Of those who are not currently running, Marco Rubio has 171, and all the others who have dropped out have a total of 16. Carson has 9, Jeb has 4, Carly, Huckabee, and Rand Paul all have 1. So does Trump think a four-man race is just way too crowded for anybody to have a legitimate shot at 1237? His math is a little bit odd here, since most of the people he talked about in the group of 17 never even won a delegate.
Greg, 1237 is hard. I got to win a lot of states, and taking on Jim Gilmore and George Pataki, there were so many candidates in there. How could anyone be expected to win 1,200? It's just too hard. Oh, dear God, stop whining. Because I love the kind of contradictions in there, that it's a completely unfair standard that he should not be held to, but he thinks he's going to reach it anyway. This is too hard, but it's too easy at the same time. It's a perpetual full-scope whining barrage from Trump in that soundbite you played. He says, you know, Kasich shouldn't be allowed to run. Like, I'm curious about this. Shouldn't be allowed. Who does he think is going to do this? Does he think that, like, Reince Priebus has some button with trap doors that he gets to press if he's at some point? Because, boy, you know, if Priebus actually had that button, who do you think would have pressed? You know, would have suddenly fallen through a trap door by this point? Yeah, it is tougher to win enough delegates when you split it. But you make a very good point, Greg, that by New Hampshire, most of these guys were out. And this is the way the rules are set up. I have a piece coming up on NRO later today. The rules, particularly look at the delegate selection rules in some of these states. Yeah, they're complicated. Yeah, each state party sets its own rules. In a lot of cases, they're all a little bit different here, a little bit different there. But whether you like them or not, these are the rules that were in place when this process began, and you cannot change it. You can't change the rules to the game halfway through the game. So if nobody gets 1237, then, and we have that first vote and nobody reaches it, well, then by golly, we go to a second vote. And if nobody reaches in the second vote, bit by bit, under the rules set by these state parties, people are unbound. And at that point, they can make whatever decision they like. Trump will actually go into Cleveland with a pretty strong argument. And I say this as a pretty full-throated Trump critic there. He'll be able to say, I've won the most states. He'll probably almost certainly be able to say, I've won the most votes. He'll be able to say, I've won the most delegates. And after that, you have to persuade those, you know, that mass of 2,000 some delegates, I am the best choice for this party. And that's where he's faltering down. And right now he's got to broaden his sense of appeal, and there's no indication of that. Kasich shouldn't be allowed to run. I don't think makes, you know, the John Kasich fans a distinct minority that they are, but they're the kind of, you know, they're enough of a slice that you could use to cobble together a majority. Trump is doing himself no favors these days.
Certainly the case. And isn't one of his strong points supposed to be the ability to make deals? So if he's a 100 or 2 delegates short come Cleveland, given his legendary skills, shouldn't he be able to find those extra delegates somewhere?
He's the great deal maker who can't put together a coalition and didn't bother to pay attention to how delegates get selected. But other than that, he's a great deal maker.
We're going to win bigly.
We're going to win so much you're going to get tired of winning. You're going to be sick of winning. Okay.
But first, you got to win at the convention, unless he actually gets the 1237. So we'll see. Starting with Wisconsin tonight, we'll see how the rest of the race goes. Jim, we will talk to you on Thursday.
See you on Thursday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.